Chapter 15. Perkins knocked on the frame of the hatch leading to the auxiliary helm, interrupting her two pilots who were engaged in a heated but quiet discussion about something. "Strebitch, Bonsu, everything squared away with you?"
"Yes, ma'am."
Irene lowered her voice with a glance toward the open hatch. The hatch had been jammed and needed to be cut away so Irene and Derek could get out of the auxiliary control center. Now the hatch was permanently open, and anyone lurking in the passageway could hear them talking. Derek understood why his fellow pilot was being so careful, and he unstrapped from his couch and floated over to the hatch. Sticking his head into the passageway, he gave her a thumbs up. Any listening or recording devices the passageway once contained would have been destroyed in the battle that had bent the heavy hatch. The aux helm had a flight recorder that stored all instrument, visual, and sound data, but Derek had learned how to temporarily disable that system, and he saw Irene had selected the pause mode.
"Colonel, it looks like if this emulator system works as advertised, we actually do have a decent shot at getting the ship to Camp Alpha, we think. It's risky, but our best shot."
Perkins nodded, so Irene continued.
"Before you arrived, Derek and I were discussing that we now have a star carrier. Is there any possibility we can get to Earth from here?"
Perkins groaned inwardly. She had enough complications to deal with.
"Strebitch, you're the pilot. You tell me if we can get there. I thought the wormhole leading to Earth is shut down, dormant or something."
"That's what the hamsters told us, yeah."
Irene lowered her eyelids in suspicion.
"I found Earth on the star chart here."
She tapped the navigation display in front of her couch, letting her finger rest longingly on the symbol for humanity's home world. Then she tapped the symbol for Camp Alpha.
"The trip would require going through multiple wormholes, but there may be a possibility we could get there. We won't know until we jump the first time and see how much that drains the star carrier's capacitors."
Perkins looked without any enthusiasm at the complicated proposed course that would take their busted half-ship deep into enemy territory.
"Does that star chart show the wormhole leading to Earth as active?"
"No."
Irene highlighted the symbol for that now dormant elder wormhole.
"Not according to the chart. But you have a full set of command codes. I was thinking, what if that wormhole is not really shut down? The Ruha did tell us they have no idea why that one wormhole shut down all by itself. That doesn't sound kosher to me.
It never seemed right to me either.
But we don't know anything about how the Elder Wormhole Network functions," Perkins cautioned her pilot.
"You're asking if my command codes reveal a different star chart, one showing that wormhole is still active?"
Irene nodded silently with an anxious glance to the hatch, and Derek motioned her to continue.
"Something like that, Colonel."
Biting her lip and clicking through the screens on her Z-phone, Perkins found the mode to transfer the phone screen to the display in front of Irene.
"Navigation data is... somewhere.
Here." Perkins allowed herself a smile of satisfaction at finding what she wanted on the alien device. Ruhar systems were not as intuitive as they could be, or maybe they just weren't intuitive to humans.
"Doesn't look any different," she frowned with disappointment.
"It is a little different," Derek noted from the hatchway. "That group of symbols in the lower left corner weren't there before."
"Huh, you're right."
Irene zoomed in that section of the display.
"Looks like our hamster friends have been holding out on us.
This shows star systems recently surrendered by the Kristang, where the Ruha fleet has conducted stealth surveys."
"Does that help us?" Perkins asked.
"No. We couldn't risk flying to any of those systems, and we don't have the range anyway," Irene declared. "Going back to the question, the answer is no, dammit. Your star chart also shows that wormhole to Earth is shut down." "If I put my intel officer hat on for a minute," Perkins mused, "I guess if anyone was lying to us about that wormhole being shut down, it's the lizards. The Kristang told us that wormhole was shut down before the Ruhar fleet took Paradise back. I can't see the hamsters have any reason to lie to us about it, but the lizards did. What I don't see in this chart is the data source. Like, do the Ruhar know that wormhole is shut down, or are they only taking the Kristang's word about it?"
"That's a good question, but it's academic right now, ma'am."
Derek kept his own voice soft, continuing to scan the passageway.
"Unless we, meaning our beetle friend, find a way to recharge the Jarap-the-Jump capacitors from the ship's reactor,
We will run out of power long before we reach that wormhole.
Irene, look, I would love to fly back to Earth. His tone indicated the subject had been argued extensively by the two pilots. We need to concentrate on surviving first. Let's not get distracted, okay?
Strebich, good initiative on asking that question.
Perkins patted the pilot's shoulder as she wiped the classified navigation data from the screen.
If we see an opportunity to...
Cadets coming, Derek whispered from the hatchway, and the conversation ended abruptly.
Very well.
Perkins turned to leave.
Ping me as soon as you're confident about the jump solution.
About that, Colonel, Irene raised a finger. We aren't doing anything to get the jump programmed. That's the cadets, and mostly Tutula. Without her, we'd be sitting dead in space. When we're ready, I'd like to offer her my seat.
You don't want to be the first human to make a star carrier jump? Perkins was surprised by that.
I would only be pressing a button, Irene explained. Tutula has been busting her ass. She deserves a chance to make the jump.
Plus, Derek added, without a wink or grin, if the drive goes kaboom, it will be all her fault.
Well, there is that.
Perkins also did not see anything humorous in the situation.
About that. Make sure we include the jump calculations and the drone will drop off before we activate the drive. If their fancy emulator software doesn't work, the Ruhar need to know about it.
All right, Strebich. I'll inform our Verdgris friend about your offer.
I want you looking over her shoulder the whole time. Someday we may need to do this on our own.
The Deal Me In jumped. The ship did not explode. Pieces of it did not go flying off in every direction, and the Rue to Stella stayed rigidly clamped to the docking platform.
Status? Perkins asked anxiously, from her awkward position strapped in next to Irene behind the two pilot couches. Unlike their jump in to find the star carrier, when the displays had gone from empty space to space filled with broken ships, this time there was nothing on the display to tell her where they had gone to, where they were now.
Sensors are working on it, ma'am. Derek reported with a look at Tutula to let the alien know that Perkins was not blaming her for the lack of data.
Captain Bonsu is correct, Tutula agreed. Our sensors were blinded by spatial distortion of the jump field. We need 7 data points to determine our position in space.
The jump drive was not significantly damaged by the jump, Ernt reported happily. The energy used was within 3% of my estimate. The drive should be capable of performing another jump without trouble.
The Giraptha shook his head in amazement. Perkins waited impatiently while the two pilots worked to collect navigation data, and Irene watched the process. Finally, Derek raised a hand.
Got it. The good news is we jumped pretty far. The bad news is we are 41 million miles off target.
41 million? Perkins gasped.
How the hell?
The calculations were accurate, Tutula stated in a tone that invited no argument. The slight battle damage to the banks of Giraptha jump drive coils could not entirely account for such a large margin of error. The Ruhar emulator program must be faulty. Colonel Perkins.
Tutula unstrapped from her couch and turned to address the human commander.
We should have enough data from this jump to further refine the emulator system.
I sure as hell hope so.
Perkins kept her temper in check. Because if we're going through a wormhole, our jump capability needs to be dead-on accurate. The next jump, 29 hours later, after feverish work recoding the emulator program, delivered much more favorable results. Despite the jump coils not working together properly and them having no way to fix that problem, the second jump came within 207,000 miles of the target. Since the second jump was much longer, Perkins, the pilots, and the cadets involved in programming the jump considered their accuracy a smashing success. Perkins waved her arms to suppress premature celebration.
Are we in position with the right timing to go through the wormhole? Yes, Irene replied with confidence, pumping a fist that only Derek could see so they could share a private celebration. The wormhole will not emerge in this space for another 3 days, and, she checked her display, 17 hours. That is plenty of time to maneuver the Deal Me In near the event horizon. We have to give the wormhole plenty of room anyway. They emerge in a slightly different location each time.
Since none of us have ever taken a ship through an Elder wormhole, and probably no one has ever moved a star carrier by a ship on a hardpoint providing the thrust, can we do this?
Oh, yes, Colonel Perkins,
Nert spoke up happily, a broad grin exposing his incisors.
I have observed the process many times. There is no trick to it. We just locate the event horizon and...
He made a ring of the index finger and thumb on one hand and vigorously demonstrated plunging his other index finger in and out of the ring.
We go in? It is easy.
Oh, so easy.
Emily Perkins had to cover her face with a hand to not burst out laughing. The goofily innocent grin on Nert's face as he made the unintentionally rude gesture was funny. But seeing Irene's face growing beet red as Nert enthusiastically kept going almost made Perkins lose her composure.
Okay, Nert. Derek reached out to restrain one of Nert's arms. The ship goes in the hole. We get the idea.
Nert is telling the truth, Colonel. Transition through a wormhole is automatic. All the ship needs to do is line up the approach and make sure we don't touch the edge of the event horizon ring.
What happens if we do touch the ring?
Then part of the ship goes through, and the other part... Derek ran a hand through the air in a cutting motion. Doesn't. Don't worry, ma'am. Our flight training did simulate a wormhole transition.
Perkins cocked her head. How extensive was this training?
Her pilots had only been in their starship pilot training for 3 days before the Bosphorok jumped in and spoiled the party. Derek looked to Irene, and they both shrugged.
2-3 hours?
Seeing Perkins's eyebrows raised in alarm, Derek added to reassure her,
Our instructor said there wasn't any point to running that sim much longer because the wormhole transition maneuver is so simple. Jumping into position close to an Elder wormhole is the tricky part. The rest is just normal space navigation.
The three of us agreed to Tula will handle the transition through the wormhole with Irene acting as co-pilot and me calling out navigation waypoints.
Except in this case, the toaster is carrying half a star carrier on its back.
Perkins pinched the bridge of her nose. Irene had noted that Emily Perkins had the honor of being the first human ever to command a starship. What the pilot had not said was that Perkins also had the crushing responsibility of being the first human ever to command a starship. If she screwed up or missed something important, she could get the entire crew killed. Even if at least one cadet survived the disaster, Perkins knew her actions and decisions would be scrutinized under a microscope by a species who overall did not like the idea of former enemies serving aboard their warships.
Yes, ma'am, Derek agreed, not mentioning that the toaster was technically attached by its belly rather than its back.
We've practiced maneuvering the combined ships, and we know the flight characteristics of this clumsy beast. Our flight plan, he called up that data on his display, has us approaching the event horizon at an angle, with the ship's thrust pushing us on a curve into the wormhole. If the engines fail, we will shoot safely past the event horizon and have to try again at another emergence point, but we won't crash into it, he announced with confidence.
You're telling me that jumping 1,000 light-years through an ancient rip in space-time is the safest part of this journey?
Irene answered for Derek.
I know it seems crazy, ma'am, but there's nothing we can do to screw up that wormhole. Everything else we do out here has multiple potentials for error.
Perkins shook her head slowly, knowing she needed to trust the judgment of her pilots, and knowing she had to trust an Elder device that no one in the galaxy fully understood.
Let's hope we don't get a visit from the screw-up fairy. All right. Release the ship from jump conditions and secure for normal space maneuvering.
The transition through the wormhole was as smooth and easy as her pilot said it would be, although she noticed Irene's knuckles turning white from tension as the ship lined up for the approach and flashed through from one part of the galaxy to another. They kept a careful eye on the charge level of the jump drive capacitors, which were getting drained rapidly. By the time they were ready for a jump into the Camp Alpha star system, it was clear that jump would be the Jarapha starship's last action.
Ma'am, Irene answered after a team spent 2 hours of checking and rechecking every part of the jump drive system.
We can jump into the system with a comfortable safety margin.
She didn't mention that comfortable meant less than 7%.
But that will be it. After the jump, the capacitors won't have the energy to get the coils over the threshold for a jump. We'll be stuck in that star system, and the Deal Me In's normal space propulsion system is offline. If we're flying to Camp Alpha, we'll do it in the Ruta Stella.
She used the ship's formal name because her audience included many cadets.
Understood. We can do it? Yes. Confidence is high.
Irene ignored the grimaces from some of the engineering cadets.
We need to, she pulled up their planned course on the display, jump in here on the near side of the second planet. That will mask our gamma ray burst from being detected on Camp Alpha. It will take 13 days to fly to Camp Alpha, but we can't get the Rue Tostella into orbit there. The reactor will shut down before we get there. The final leg of the flight needs to be in dropships.
Perkins had assumed that would be their best option. The review continued for another hour, partly because there was a large group of people involved in the process of verifying all the systems involved, and they all wanted to weigh in on the decision, so Perkins politely endured the endless rehashing of issues. She also listened because she wanted them all to buy into the plan to set down on Camp Alpha and take shelter there until rescue hopefully arrived. It wasn't a great plan, and there were a lot of unhappy cadets, but no one had a better idea that was realistic, and even Biff grudgingly admitted the ship's failing condition did not offer an option of remaining aboard and hoping for the best. The final jump of the Deal Me In was successful, in that the ship did not explode. They emerged less than 180,000 miles from their target location, and they were not immediately ambushed by enemy starships. Because the jump was draining the last bit of power from the capacitors and the power flow was unsteady, the jump was rough enough to make the toaster's one reactor shut down. Let me guess. Perkins tried to keep her own expression neutral as she saw the anguish displayed by Jin. The reactor can't be fixed?
No.
Relief flashed across Jin's face. Relief she did not have to argue with their human commander, and she had to admit to herself, relief that she was no longer responsible for keeping a dangerous reactor limping along.
Well, it got us here. I suppose we can be grateful for that, Perkins said sourly.
I didn't mean that, she quickly added. Your ship designers have created remarkable machines. And you and your team, she waved an arm to encompass the exhausted group of engineering cadets, deserve congratulations for what you have achieved. What you achieved on a real ship in a real crisis. When you get back to the academy, classroom exercises will seem a bit dull, won't they?
That drew weary smiles from most of the cadets.
We'll need to fly the rest of the way in dropships. It will be a long flight in tight quarters, but about that, ma'am.
Irene waved for attention.
We have a bit of a problem.
A bit?
Colonel,
Derek tapped the display in front of him.
Lady Karma has been so nice getting us here and all. I think she wants payback now. There's a group of Kristang on Camp Alpha.
God,
Perkins thought better of taking the Lord's name in vain right then.
How many?
It is difficult to say exactly, Tutula spoke. The signal is faint. We are picking up short-range surface-to-surface transmissions from a single site that is almost around the curve of the planet. They do not appear to have an active communication satellite. One of the transmissions used a Kristang word that means eight.
She wiggled the four fingers on one hand.
The speaker complained there are too few of them left. More than eight, but less than 16.
You get anything else from that transmission?
It was one soldier complaining to another about the poor quality of the food, and that they do not expect a ship to return for many months, so they are stuck on the surface. Colonel, I believe they occupy a single small site that is some type of research facility.
Great, Perkins thought bitterly. Karma had indeed been kind to them until that moment.
Tutula, you keep listening. I want Jates to listen with you so we're not relying on translations that might not be entirely accurate. Cadet Colsoon.
She turned to find the senior cadet who was floating near the rear of the compartment, looking angry.
Get people loaded into dropships while we select a flight path and landing site. We will come in over the opposite side of the planet from the Kristang base and keep our presence concealed.
I'm telling you, the human is going to get us all killed,
Biff whispered from the co-pilot seat of the dropship.
He didn't know why he was whispering. The only occupants of the ship were Ruhar cadets.
She had no way to know,
Jin replied as she ran a diagnostic check on the ship's systems from a console at the cockpit's rear bulkhead, making sure the airspace craft was ready for atmospheric entry and flight.
She had to rely on painstakingly referring to a checklist on the console because she had no experience with that model of dropship. It was a humbling task, and if she missed something critical or made a mistake, everyone aboard could be killed in the fiery process of contacting the atmosphere.
It was a possibility.
It was, and we all knew it. Jin did not look away from her work.
There is a small group of Kristang at one site, and Colonel Perkins plans for us to land on the other side of the planet. The Kristang will never know we're here.
Bift snorted.
Maybe. If we're lucky.
They didn't spot the route to Stella flying past, and that's a bigger sensor signature. They're not looking. We'll be safe as we can be.
We...
What? She swiveled her chair to confront the senior cadet.
What do you suggest? Colonel Perkins gave the only order she could. The ship's reactor was shut down. We couldn't stay aboard. The dropships can't maintain life support for long, not for this many people. Once we jumped into this system, we had only one option. You talk a lot about how leaders have to make tough decisions.
She clacked her incisors on her lower teeth in a derisive gesture, because guys like Bift always assumed they would be in positions of leadership.
The human made a tough decision.
Not so tough, Bift snapped. She had no other choice.
If that's what you think, then what is your problem?
This,
Bift fumbled with how to respond.
This whole operation has been a mess.
You could have done better.
It was her turn to sniff. She turned back to her console.
Even if we do get killed here, we jumped a Jirapha star carrier. None of our people have ever done that.
Along the way to Camp Alpha, the Rue to Stella had dropped off flight recorder buoys before every jump and wormhole transition, so any Ruhar ship that found the buoys would learn that the emulation software had worked after a few adjustments.
I don't expect any of us will achieve anything more significant than that in our entire careers. That is better than staying aboard a dying ship in the middle of interstellar space, praying for rescue. That was your plan.
Bift opened his mouth to retort, but he couldn't think of anything to say, so he sat and silently fumed, and hated Lieutenant Colonel Emily Perkins.